I'm really glad you guys are here, and we are going to dive right into this continued series on relationships, and today is going to lean a little heavier into maybe a marriage relationship, but again, these ideas and these truths transcend that, and so I want everyone to lean in. This applies to your work relationships. This applies to a lot of your friendships, and so we're gonna dive in to this together today, and you might... if you're like me, I stay away from like scary movies. I don't really like to watch scary movies. I don't enjoy scary movies. There's something about the way my personality is wired where I want to watch something that's more entertaining and more and like kind of uplifting. And I think there's something about that with just being a 7 on the Enneagram and kind of wanting to run from negative emotion all the time and all that stuff. So it's a balance. But then there are certain movies that strike a real chord. They do a nice job of bringing great emotion, great feelings, great things with the darkness. And there's one of the things that was kind of resurfaced in my mind as a very scary part of a movie that I endured because of the greatness of the movie. And it's if you grew up reading Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, anybody like Lord of the Rings? And so they made those movies and the Fellowship of the Ring, and my kids started to get into the Fellowship of the Ring, and so we watched all the movies and we watched The Hobbit. And I remember in the Fellowship of the Ring at the very beginning, if you haven't seen these movies, you should go and watch them. There is a sequence where there are some old kings from an ancient time that have been turned into these basically knight riding 9. They're called the Nazgul, and they're like the dark riders, and they are basically after anyone that's going to do good or after more evil. And so ultimately, when Frodo gets this ring, they are trying to attack him and they're trying to kill him. And these knight riders, these 9, these Nazgul, are so scary that literally, like, it shocks me. Like, if you remember, like, they literally are like these really scary creatures. And they have this shrieking sound that they make. And ultimately, if they get a hold of you and they can kill you, they are just horrific creatures. And at one point, one of them actually stabs Frodo, and unless he gets to the elves, he's gonna die. And so they are just vicious, and every time you see them, the way that the movie is made, you are scared. You are like, whoa, like, I gotta get away from them. Like, I'm like, get up from the couch and go somewhere else for a minute because of that moment. And every time I hear that sound, I'm like, this is, wow, this is, they really made these guys scary. And when it comes to relationships, they've actually found that there is something that is that level of scary in relationships. In fact, as we've looked at this series, we've talked about a lot of different things. We've talked about how there are bids for connection that cause conflict, how ultimately in a study that was done, when you have quality relationships, it extends your life, it improves your life, and ultimately quality relationships have low amounts of conflict, and so a quality relationship has a very low amount of conflict, as you can imagine. And so we talked about how conflict is really this result of the fall of man and playing the blame game, and that, like, all the time your problems really are someone else's problems. And until you start to deal with what's going on in you, like, you're in trouble. And today, what I want to show you is that when we get to this place where we have not worked on us, we've not grown enough, we don't understand how to deal with conflict effectively, that ultimately, when we go the opposite direction and we allow kind of the fall and brokenness that's happened to all of us really take control of our lives, that what happens is the way that conflict shows up in our relationships is so bad that it has the ability to destroy your life, like destroy your relationships. And ultimately, a man who we've been looking at, John Gottman, who's done years and years of research, has called these kinds of things that show up in relationships the four horsemen of the apocalypse, because when they show up in your marriage or in a relationship and they're strong, it basically is the beginning of the end. And this is a reference to the apocalyptic idea in the Bible that says that at one point all the things that are now are going to kind of come to an end. There's going to be an event, and it's going to be very bad before it gets very good. And ultimately, John Gottman says these four things in a relationship, they're so bad that if you have these exhibited at a high level in your relationship, you are in trouble. In fact, I'm going to show you a video to unpack these four horsemen, these four things that happen in a relationship that ultimately are the beginning of the end. And something that's fascinating about John Gottman is he's so in tune with these types of dynamics and the way that couples interact that he can actually tell when a couple sits down within 5 to 6 minutes, up to 90% accuracy, whether or not that couple is going to stay married or not, based upon these ideas and how they interact. And so I want to share with you these four horsemen, and I want you to just listen to this and see that these things, when they are exhibited heavily in your relationship, you are in serious trouble. You are not, it doesn't mean it's over today. It means you can start to get help. But also, even if some of these ideas are exhibited in your relationships with friends, coworkers, whatever, and specifically maybe your spouse, that there's still a ton to work on, because all of us should be able to relate to some of these ideas at one level or another in our relationships, and all of us have a lot to work on as it relates to the things that can cause conflict in relationships. So this is the four horsemen.
What an idiot.
It's not my fault we're always late.
Forget it.
Criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. Dr. John Gottman calls these negative communication patterns the four horsemen of the apocalypse, because they'll lead to the end of your relationship. In fact, he can predict this relationship failure with over 90% accuracy if the behavior isn't changed. So, what can you do? Well, at the Gottman Institute, we understand you might not even know you're communicating this way, or you might not know how to control it. But if you practice the following four research-based antidotes, there is hope for your future. Criticism attacks the character of the recipient instead of focusing on a specific behavior. The antidote to criticism is to talk about your feelings using I statements, then express a positive need. Contempt is an expression of superiority that comes out as sarcasm, cynicism, name-calling, eye-rolling, sneering, mockery, and hostile humor. Contempt is the greatest predictor of relationship failure and must be eliminated. The antidote to contempt is to treat one another with respect and build a culture of appreciation within the relationship. Defensiveness is self-protection through righteous indignation or playing the victim. Defensiveness never solves the problem and is really just an underhanded way of blaming your partner. The antidote to defensiveness is to accept responsibility, even if only for part of the conflict. Stonewalling occurs when the listener withdraws from the conversation without resolving anything. It takes time for the negativity created by the first three horsemen to result in stonewalling. But when it does, it can become a habit. The antidote to stonewalling is to break for at least 20 minutes. Calm down, then return to the conversation. Spare your relationship from certain destruction. Learn more about eliminating the four horsemen by visiting our site.
Yeah, so that's a lot. And we'll post that on our social media outlet. And if you want that, we can email it to you. But what you need to hear when you're looking at that video and what you're seeing is that there's a major, major breakdown that can happen in relationships that leads to the end. And ultimately, what we are finding in research today, in studies of relationships, and what Gottman has found, and what Harvard has found, and all the people that are doing the most extensive studies on research, is that these things, they start to happen in our life when we don't exhibit the things that God tells us to do, which is fascinating. Ultimately, the four horsemen are a result of a total lack, or ultimately like a completely like opposite direction of everything that God has called us to do. And the antidotes to the four horsemen are things that God specifically outlines in the Bible as here's how you should live your life. So when you look at the four horsemen, what you see is brokenness, destruction, high conflict, ultimately a level of breakdown in relationship that could be called potentially the word hate. Such disdain, such a problem in your closest relationships. So ultimately, what God did is he understands the four horsemen. He understands brokenness in relationship. And he said, I'm going to solve that from the inside out by giving you Jesus to transform your heart. And then by having him be modeled for you and taught to you as to what the antidote to all these breakdowns in relationship are. And ultimately, the four horsemen fall incredibly short of the Christian calling of love. They fall incredibly, when you look at what is happening in a couple that is exhibiting those behaviors tremendously, or just in people when they get defensive, and that one resonates with me. I get defensive, I'm sensitive, and so there's something going on in me where I am ultimately not adapting, growing, becoming what God has called me to become, especially as he has outlined for me in the scriptures what love is, what love looks like in the person of Jesus. And as I move towards the person of Jesus and move towards the mold and the lifestyle of love that Jesus has given me, then the four horsemen are like in the rearview mirror. Like the whole thing just breaks down. Like, and so it's fascinating. Everything that they are finding in research is basically upholding and showing like, dude, this thing is not just transformative. It's not just supernatural. It is practical. Like you could not know God and do the things that the Bible says and have better relationships. Now, ultimately, it's going to break down because you need to know God. But you need to have him transform you in order to truly become the image of a small Christ, a little Christ in this world that we live in. But the four horsemen, the blame game, the things we've been talking about, these are the results of a brokenness in what we know as Christian love. God has called us to a very high calling. And so there's a passage of scripture I want to show you today. We're going to open it up. Please open up your Bibles. We're going to open up 1 Corinthians 13, and we're going to read a little bit of this together. And if you have your phone, you can open it up. And if you have your actual Bible, can anybody see that the sun is getting me right here? Woo! Times are changing. Is it the first day of fall? It's pretty close, isn't it? Isn't the first day of fall today or tomorrow? I mean, the sun is in a different spot is the point I'm getting at right now, okay? I've been standing here every day for the past 3 months, and the sun has not been here. Now it's here, September 21st. Okay, so 1 Corinthians 13. Now, a couple things I want to share with you about 1 Corinthians 13 is Paul is writing this letter to a church that he's very connected to. He has an intimate relationship with this church. He started this church, and he knows this church. So in the scriptures, throughout the process of putting the certain letters that Paul wrote in the scriptures, they found that these two letters, 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians, fit in, and they wanted to have them in there. But he wrote more than two letters. He wrote maybe three or four letters to the Corinthians because he loved them so much, he cared about them so much, and he was very closely associated with what they were going through. Now, one of the things that they're going through in Corinth is they're struggling to understand what is most important about the Christian faith. And so two of the things that they're arguing about, number one, is communion. And they're arguing about the way that communion should be done. They're arguing about who should take communion. And ultimately, in the process of trying to figure out what's most important, they're not treating each other the right way. There's something that's happening in a breakdown in the relationships. Another thing that's happening in the church in Corinth is there's a lot of things that happened in the first church associated with signs and wonders, like speaking in tongues and prophecy and different miracles of healing. And so ultimately, those things in that church are somewhat being paraded by certain people that can do them, and they're kind of posturing for the rest of the church and almost communicating like, if you don't do these tongues, which tongues was a sign in the early church that God would use where you could speak and then he would supernaturally take your words and make it so that other people could hear, or that it would come from God and people would translate it. And so it was like a way to share the gospel with lots of different people groups and different languages. And so certain people had that gift, and they were ultimately, some of them, getting prideful about the fact that they had gifts and the other people didn't. And so Paul, he hears these problems, and ultimately in the book of 1 Corinthians, his whole heart is to kind of tell everybody what matters most in the whole Christian life. He's trying to go like, I know you're arguing about communion, and that's important, and here's how you should deal with that, 1 Corinthians 11. And then I know you're arguing about like prophecy and gifts and times and signs and wonders and all that stuff, and that's important, but here's how it makes sense. Not everybody should do it, and he talks about that. And then he gets to 1 Corinthians 13, where he kind of crescendos, and he says, ultimately, what matters most in the entire Christian life is not kind of necessarily those details of who's better or who should take communion. That's important. But and signs and wonders, but ultimately what is most important in the Christian life is love. Love is most important. And ultimately what he does in the book of 1 Corinthians in chapter 13, which is remarkable, is he takes the three most grand components of the Christian life, the three top things, faith, hope, and love, and he actually puts them in a hierarchy. All of us are here because we want to trust God. We trust God. We follow God. We're putting our faith in God. Faith is important, right? Yes, it's important. Not as important as love. Hope is important, right? I mean, we are holding on. We have a hope of a past resurrected Christ that gives us a promise for a future hope that ultimately all of our sin and death and hurt will be wiped away, and that's what we're holding on to. According to Paul, faith is important, not as important as love. He ends chapter 13 that way. Hope is important, not as important as love. He ends chapter 13 that way, and he's ultimately trying to tell every single person that is in the church of Corinth, guys, the way that you love one another, the way that you engage each other, not just in a sense of marriage, but in friendships. He's writing this to the entire church. So the pastor with the followers, the friends, the brothers, the sisters, the fathers and mothers to their children, and the spouses, he is saying love is the most important part. The way you love one another is the secret sauce. It is the spicy, it is the thing. And there was a hymn that was written a couple, like 100 or so years ago by a man that's so amazing, he kind of captured this idea of love being the most important. And this is one of the lines from this poem. It says, faith will vanish into sight. Faith is important. Hope be emptied in delight. Love in heaven will shine more bright. He's ultimately saying that love is more important. Why? Why? Because faith, one day when you see God, it's going to go away. Hope, one day when you see God, you're not going to need it. But love is something that actually matters now, because you need to become love, because ultimately the entire Christian life is about transforming into people of love. And when we get to heaven, if we know him, when we're with God, we won't need faith because we'll see him. We won't need hope because everything will be solved, but we will still be the result of turning into loving people who look and talk and act like Jesus. Ultimately, what Paul is saying is love is our destiny. It's not just our duty. You're not just supposed to act like this for a little while. It ultimately is what you're going to become as you follow Jesus. Isn't that cool? Love is your destiny, so start now. Start loving, because faith's going to go away. Hope's going to go away. You won't need it anymore. You need love. You will always need love. It's who you're becoming. There's a great story about kind of taking something great and finalizing, and how much this idea of love in 1 Corinthians 13 kind of takes us to, like, we're moving on this pathway, and we learn these things. We're going to become love, and there's something inside of us that ultimately is going to resolve as people of love, as creatures of love, that we exhibit the behaviors and the attitudes and the way that God lives his life and wants us to live our lives. Mozart was kind of a wild kid, and there's a story that he would actually go out and party, and he'd get a little wild, and then he would come home, and he would get on the piano, and his dad was in bed, who was also an amazing musician. And he would get on the piano, and he would just start ripping out, and he would ultimately take this song and take the song into a place where he would do the scale. You know, just a regular scale. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. But what he would do is he would take the music, and he would run it all the way up to the scale and not resolve it back to do. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti. And just leave it there. He'd leave it there, and he'd go to bed, and his father would hear it and sit in bed and just couldn't handle it not being resolved. So he'd get up, go down, and play his own version and resolve it and bring it back to do. And the idea there is that love is something that we're supposed to start becoming, and ultimately, when we get to heaven, when we become who we're supposed to become, we will resolve not as faith creatures, not as hope creatures, as love creatures. That's what we're becoming. That's the resolution. That's God's call in our life. That is why conflict, brokenness, all this stuff, it is the antithesis of God's Christian calling of love in all of our lives. So when we look at what Paul is saying in 1 Corinthians 13, he is telling them, you need to become this. This is your ultimate destiny. This is who you are. Love matters more than anything else. And if you start to do the things in 1 Corinthians 13 that he lists, you will start to see conflict and broken relationship move out of your life. Now, I want to challenge you. We're going to look at one aspect of love that is a key to resolving conflict in your relationship that is found in 1 Corinthians 13. But here's what I want everyone to do. I want everyone this week to go home and read 1 Corinthians 13, these verses. What is it? 4-7. And I want you to read line by line the things that Paul says love is. Now, here's the thing about Paul. He's not just telling everybody what he thinks love is. These people at the church know him. They've spent time with him. So he actually exhibits these behaviors, and that's why he's able to write it, and they listen to him. They go, oh, yeah, Paul did show up. He was that way. He did talk that way. He was like that. And Paul has this understanding of, I've been transformed by the sacrificial mission and love of Jesus, so I'm not telling you to do something that I'm not doing myself. This is what works. This is what makes things work better. So I want you to go home, look at line by line, and just stop at each thing. And pray about it. Just pray about each thing, each word, each idea, and go, and just, God, help me become. God, what do I need to do to get? God, how can I exhibit this? And so that's where you start, and we're going to give you some tools for taking some huge steps today. But let's read Paul talking about love as the ultimate destiny, the thing that we're supposed to work on, and ultimately the antidote for any type of brokenness in relationship that we have. He says, love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, right? I mean, oh. Right? You just sit on that. Just sit on that. It does not envy. Just pray about that. Just spend a week praying. What are you envious of? What are you jealous of? It does not boast. Love does not boast. In the future, kingdom of God, we will not be boastful. We will be humble. Humble, kind people. This is our destiny. This is what we will ultimately resolve. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It never dishonors others. I mean, just imagine a world where nobody dishonors anybody. That's heaven. That is heaven. That is the kingdom of God. That is the way that Jesus wants it. That is relationships. Imagine if when you think about honor, when I think about honor, I think about the military. I think about maybe if some, like the president showed up somewhere, and I know everybody has different ideas about the president, but the idea of the president shows up, and you have to be like, you're honoring, like you would shake hand, you would say hello, sir, you would do all that, like because it's like a position that you honor. You might honor someone who you know fought in a battle sometime. You would honor them. Imagine if the honor that you thought about someone who fought a great military battle over all those years, or they had purple stars or purple hearts, imagine if you brought that honor to your closest relationships. How different would they be? They would be loving. They would be different. They would just be radically different. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects. It always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. Now, there is so much in there that honestly, if we just mastered all of this, we would be little Christs. We would just be little Christ running all over the place with all of our goodness, just making the world a better place all the time. We would have very low conflict relationships. We wouldn't need to come to church anymore. We just would not ever need to come here. And all I want to talk about is one thing, and it's this word, trust. Trust. Research has found that trust is the key breakdown when conflict is heavy. Trust is the key breakdown when there's high conflict. When you think about the blame game, you start to think about trust. I have to defend myself. I have to protect myself. So I'm not going to say that I did anything wrong. I'm going to make it all about them. I'm not going to be vulnerable because if I open up and talk about my weaknesses, they may strike. So I don't trust. The blame game is rooted in a lack of trust. Whenever we have relationships that are really breaking down, where we're not working together, coming together, there's something going on in the trust department that is causing the conflict. And this is what has been found, and this is one of the things Paul says, and ultimately God says, trust. You gotta figure out the trust situation. If you figure out trust, then you will start to have relationships reduce in conflict, and you will start to look more like God everywhere you go, every person you interact with. Now ultimately, the way that Gottman describes trust, and is found in this text as well, is this: trust is established when we believe our partner or our friend or our coworker cares about our welfare as much as our own. Let me read that again. Trust is established. Trust is established when we believe that our partner, our friend, our coworker cares about us, not just themselves. When we live in a world where we're surrounded by people and we think that their actions actually have inside of them, in their motives, a consideration for my well-being, I trust. I trust you. I mean, you think about this in the smallest relationships. If someone is selling you a product, can you tell the difference between when someone is just trying to get your money or when they kind of care? Like, I actually have a product. You don't have to buy it. It would help you, and I care about you getting it. Yes, I make money, but I actually want you to have something in return for this. You go, oh, I kind of trust this person. They're not just in it to make a profit. They're actually in it to help me. You start to see this. This is how relationships start to build. When you go, wow, that person cares about me. Wow, that person really cares about how I feel. Wow, that person really understands about my life. They really care about what I'm going through. They really care about where I'm headed in my life. Now, there's lots of different ways that this plays out. One of the things that they have found that is fascinating, and this is for the guys, this is really fascinating, is that in terms of sex, woohoo, actually having sex, they have found that men who asked kind of to have sex with their wives, that when their wives say no, when they actually say no, and the husband has a good response to the no, that the husbands who respond well to no have more sex. So I want you to think about that. What this is saying is that when a wife feels like her husband only wants to have sex for him, it shuts her down even more. When a wife feels like a husband doesn't just care about his own interests and cares about hers, it ultimately grows intimacy in a relationship. So here's what they found, is that husbands have to actually learn to be okay with no. Because here's what happens when we're okay with no. It shows trust. Because here's what the actual next part is. If there's an advance and then there's a no, it's okay, no. What do you want to do? What do you want to watch a movie? You want to eat some ice cream? You want to go run around the block? You want to, what are you interested in? And when husbands actually advance and then the wife says no and they say, okay, that's okay that it's no. I want you to know that I care about whatever's on your mind. You know what's on my mind. I care about what's on your mind, and I'm gonna prove it to you by showing that I care. So ultimately, trust comes when we constantly show people what matters to you, what you're feeling, your emotions, the pain you're going through, the thoughts that are on your mind, whatever you're experiencing, that matters tremendously to me, and I am going to show you that it matters. And what wife doesn't want a guy that actually cares about more than just sex? Rhetorical question. We have to start to actually care about what other people are going through. Actually care about what other people are feeling. Actually care. And the more we show we care, the more we develop trust, and relationships get better. Now we're gonna watch a video that exemplifies this to a T.
It's just, there's all this pressure, you know? And sometimes it feels like it's right up on me. And I can just feel it, like literally feel it in my head, and it's relentless. And I don't know if it's gonna stop. I mean, that's the thing that scares me the most, is that I don't know if it's ever gonna stop.
Yeah. Well, you do have a nail in your head.
It is not about the nail.
Are you sure? Because, I mean, I'll bet if we got that out of there...
Stop trying to fix it.
No, I'm not trying to fix it. I'm just pointing out that maybe the nail is causing...
You always do this. You always try to fix things when what I really need is for you to just listen. No,
see, I don't think that is what you need. I think what you need is to get the nail
out. See, you're not even listening now.
Okay, fine. I will listen. Fine.
It's just... Sometimes it's like there's this achy... I don't know what it is. And I'm not sleeping very well at all. And all my sweaters are snagged. I mean, all of them.
That sounds really hard.
It is. Thank you. Ow!
Oh, come on. Ow. If you would just...
Don't! Try to see things
my way. Do I have... Listen. What you find is that people are all the same in this sense. They want to be heard. They want to be understood. They want to be cared for. And we want to fix things, guys. Everybody wants to do this. And we spend our time maybe looking at something, going, here's how I could solve that, as opposed to going, I want to understand where this person is coming from. And ultimately, the goal in relationship is to understand where someone is coming from, show them that you care where they're coming from, and not always try to fix everything all the time. I had this happen in my life, and again, like, I am not sharing all these things with you because I figured all this out. I am figuring this out. I am sharing so much of this with you because as I read it, I'm like, and learning, I'm kind of like, wow, I have a lot of ways that I could improve and need to improve and want to improve. And ultimately, about a year ago, my wife said, like, I want to get a dog, and she's very overwhelmed. We have three little kids, and her business is growing tremendously. The church is very busy. And I just kept saying, like, I want a dog, but I don't think we should get a dog. And so ultimately, 2 months before we got the dog, I kept saying, I want a dog. I don't think you should get a dog. I don't want, you know, it's like you got to take it out and all this stuff. She pulled me aside and said, hey, I hear your message about the dog. I know you don't want to get a dog. I want a dog, so don't bring it up anymore. And I said, let it be written. I will never bring it up again. I will never say another word. I got the message. 2 weeks, 1 week into having a dog. The dog was waking up 3 times a night. The kids were not sleeping in their own beds. Half of them were sick. We had traveled. Her work was blowing up, and she had her biggest week of ever. And on top of that, it was summertime, so the kids were home all day. It was craziness. One morning, she goes, hey, can we talk for a second? And she pulled me into the bathroom, actually, and she sat down, and she just started bawling. And she just started talking about how difficult everything was, and the kids and all the neighbors are over, and my work won't stop, and the phone is ringing off the hook, and oh my gosh, and you're so busy, and you've been gone a lot of different nights, and then the dog is here, and the dog is up all night, and every other thing, and this, all that, and I listen to that, and I'm like, I had the perfect moment to say, I told you this was going to happen. I told you this was going to happen. I told you this was going to happen. But actually, and I'm not trying to make myself a hero, I screwed this up for so many years, especially when we had kids. I did a very bad job of understanding that my wife, especially with our first, was waking up all night because our son didn't sleep through the night, our firstborn, for 18 months. And I was starting the church, and she was raising these babies and having her own practice, and I did not step up and show her that I understood where she was coming from. And so I said in that moment, instead of "I told you so," now the only reason I'm telling you this is because it's one of the only times it's happened. I said to her, I said, "That sounds really hard, and I'll wake up. The dog is all mine now. The dog is all mine. So I'll alleviate somewhere where I can. You don't have to wake up ever again to let the dog out." And ever since then, ever since week one, that's what I've done. And she feels like a different human. Because, my friends, it's not about the dog. It's about trust. It's about me going, "I care about you. I care about what you're going through. I'm here to help." And so here's the deal. You want to start to build trust in your relationship. One of the keys, if not the key, to building trust in a relationship is this right here. And this is not from me. This is research-based. We build trust by listening to our partners' or friends' negative emotions. We listen to them. We actually stop what we're doing and let them tell us what's going on in their life. In fact, John Gottman says that in marriages, there are certain types of relationships he has called marriage masters. They've mastered relationships. And in marriage master relationships, there is a singular motto that puts them above all other relationships. And this is the motto of masters of marriage. It's this phrase right here: when you're hurting, the world stops and I listen. When you're hurting, the world stops and I listen. I am here to help you. You matter to me. When you are struggling, I want to build trust. I want you to know I love you. I want you to see that what matters to you, it matters to me. And the people that when someone in their life is struggling, they stop and they go, "Hey, everything doesn't matter compared to this right now. I care about you. I care about your life. I care about your relationship. Our relationship. I want to know what's going on. Let me hear it." This is a secret sauce to building strong relationships. Now, in order to do this, there's a couple things you have to do. Both need to listen. Both parties need to start to say, "Hey, you're hurting. I'll listen." But the other side is this. Both need to share. Both people in the relationship have to be willing to share what they're going through, have to be willing, and that will happen as you give them an opportunity, as you give them an opportunity. Now, ultimately, to bring this all home, the whole focus of this, of building trust, and here's how we get there, is through this idea of showing your partner, showing your friend that I genuinely want to understand what's going on in your world. I want to understand it. I want you to tell me. I want you to teach me. I want to carry it with you. I want to understand. And John Gottman says this: understanding makes conflict constructive. When you fight to understand, you start to build trust. You actually are showing the person, "Hey, what's going on in your world matters to me. My life, I'm going to put it on pause. I want to understand. Tell me what's going on. I want to hear what's happening in your life." And what happens with understanding is understanding leads to compassion. You see, when you care about someone, it comes through. And when it comes through, you start to hear what's going on, and you're like, "Wow, that is hard. That is painful." And when you start to actually listen enough to understand someone's negative emotion, you start to get a heart for them. You go, "Man, that would be hard. If I put myself in your shoes, I would be crying too. If I didn't sleep, I'd be a mess myself. I would be struggling." Of course you're struggling. Now your heart starts to grow for people when you choose to understand. And compassion leads to actually showing that you care. And when you show you care about someone else's experience, it leads to trust. "I care about you. You matter to me. I'm listening. My life's on pause for you. Tell me what's going on. Love, my friends. It always trusts. What does this mean? We have to work towards trust. We build trust. We do it by constantly communicating to the people we love the most that we actually love them the most, that their ideas, their needs, their problems, they matter to us. This is what's so amazing. This is Jesus. This is the life of Christ. Paul says in another letter, he says, you should have the mind or the attitude of Christ. Here's your attitude. Your attitude should be that you are God and you have everything, but you actually don't consider equality with God a thing to be grasped, but put off your interests for the interests of others. Relationships thrive when we care about the people in our lives, and we show it. We show that we care. And so here's what I want you to walk away with. I want you, in whatever relationship maybe you're having conflict in, whatever relationship that you want to expand upon, grow, improve, I want you to think differently. Instead of fighting to be right, instead of fighting to be heard, fight to understand. Fight for it. Think, I want to understand, I want to know, I want to hear, because that's going to turn to compassion. Compassion is going to turn into caring, and caring is going to turn into trust. And trust is a key for a relationship, and it's a picture of what it looks like to be like Jesus. One final thing. We know this to be true. We know this to be true. We see this with students. We see this with students. And we had 70 middle school students go to a Boom retreat this weekend, and a bunch of them accepted Christ. And I just want you to get this picture as we close down today, because these kids are choosing to follow God. And the way that they're going to follow God is because they have people in their life who are worth following and that show they care about them. Now, when I was growing up, there was different approaches to students. There was kind of the heavy-handed, you're not behaving, you need to get your life right, you need to behave first, and then you'll be loved and whatnot. But what we're seeing and what we all see with students is this idea, that when a kid is not acting right, that going and just telling them how to behave doesn't solve anything. But actually, if you go to a student and you go, what is going on? And you sit with a student maybe in a small group experience, or you have a one-on-one with a student and you go, can you tell me what's going on in your life? Because when kids are acting crazy, it's usually because they're around crazy things. And something's going on. We know this when it comes to little children. We don't try to make our babies stop crying without understanding why. We understand why they're crying. They need food. Their diaper's full. We actually understand and we care, so they trust us. Imagine if that's the same way it is with people. When someone is crying, when someone is hurting, when a student is acting out, imagine if in your world you went, I'm not going to just tell them how to be. I want to understand what's going on with them. Why are they doing that? Why would they say that? And ask any kid, any student, any person, that if they have someone in their life who shows that they actually care about what they're going through, ask them who they trust more. Someone who tells them how to act, or someone who tells them how much they care. It's the process of life change. So I'm going to pray for us, and Kevin's going to lead us in a chorus that we sang earlier about following Jesus. And I think that it fits, because 1 Corinthians 13 is a mold, it's a picture of what we have for us in our future and what God has for us. And so if we're going to follow Jesus, then we're going to follow 1 Corinthians 13. We're going to strive for it. We're going to unpack it. We're going to work towards it. It is our destiny. Let's pray. Father, I thank you so much for this series, for how much we're learning, for how much I'm learning. I pray, God, that you would change me and that you would give me a heart that seeks understanding, where I would genuinely care about the friends in my life, about my wife, about my friends and my coworkers and my kids, that I would actually seek to understand, that I would actually seek to build trust. That God, I just pray that we would all be the kind of people who are moving quickly in the direction of becoming more like you. We love you and we want to follow you no matter where you lead us. Give us the courage to do that in Jesus' name.
wherever you lead me, whatever it costs me, oh, all I want is you, Jesus, all I want is you, wherever you lead me, and whatever it costs me, wherever you lead me, whatever it costs me, oh, all I want is you, oh, all I want is you, and you are the refuge I run to, you are the fire that leads me through the night, and I'll follow you anywhere. There's a million reasons to trust you, and nothing to fear, for you are by my side, and I'll follow you anywhere. Let's sing that chorus one more time. Oh, you are the refuge I run to. You are the fire that leads me through the night. And I'll follow you anywhere. There's a million reasons to trust you, and nothing to fear, for you are by my side, follow you anywhere. I'll follow you anywhere.
All right, thank you guys for being here. These are the moments where we take the promptings that we get from the message and from worship today and from being together, and we move back out into the world as the hands and the feet of Christ and have an opportunity to actually serve God with what we do and who we are and who we become. Thank you guys for being here, and please come see Scott and I at the tent outside the main doors if you're interested in Vertical 196. We love you guys.